You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework. Here's your host, DevOps Institute CEO, Jane Grohl.
Hi, everyone. It's Jane Grohl of the DevOps Institute, and welcome to another episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Today, I'm joined by my good friend, BMK, coming from New Zealand. And today's topic is going to be mostly about practical DevOps. Hi, BMK. Why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Hey, Zane, thank you very much for this platform and this opportunity. Hi, all. It's good to be here and great to be here talking about practical DevOps and with a good friend of mine, known for a while, Jane Grohl, who's the CEO of DevOps Institute. And I am delighted. I'm one of the ambassadors for the DevOps Institute. My name is BMK Lakshmi Narayanan. I'm based out of Wellington, New Zealand. And let's get into this directly and talk some facts and fun about practical DevOps.
So BMK, as you know, I've known you now for several years. And one of the things I've always admired about just talking to you privately, but also listening to some of your conference presentations, is you come from the real world, right? You come from the enterprise, a highly regulated industry. And I think you've seen a lot of DevOps rise over the last few years with insight into how does this work in a practical sense, particularly in an organization that is subject to governance, that certainly has to manage risk, that has compliance requirements. So talk a little bit maybe to start about what have you seen kind of year over year in say the 3 or 4 years since I've known you in terms of the evolution of DevOps from a practical perspective.
Yeah, I think that's a good question, Jane, because the context how enterprise they see when it comes to the DevOps adoption or for that matter, any adoption, like, you know, it could be agile transformation, DevOps transformation or digital transformation. I see that, like, you know, they all start and struggle a bit. The reason because of the existing processes that they have in their organization. And they, most of the times, you know, we are clueless about how to fit in these kind of existing processes, existing procedures, the way how we operate, the way of doing things in an old school way into the new model of what we call, like, you know, DevOps adoption. I see that as actually I was thinking about actually a title yesterday night for my next talk called The Great Disconnect. Okay, it's a DevOps transformation story. The why I say it's a great disconnect is basically, if you look at from an end-to-end, from an organization, from the time that you take something and you want to deliver a value to a customer, and in the entire value stream, there are a lot of things, you know, that we do which are not really connected very well. And we miss those dots. And you correctly said, like, in terms of risk, in terms of security, in terms of compliance. And I come from in a highly regulated financial industry. And we have an heightened awareness for anything and everything related to risk because we are a bank and we have to be meeting those regulatory requirements. But at the same time, you need to also see how I can deliver these values, you know, faster to my customer. So I see example. I can give you a few examples, like, in where as an organization, I mean, not only me, but also I've seen what's happening in the community, what the presentation that I've listened to in the DevOps enterprise community and all. They struggle with how do we do the architecture? How do we do the design governance? How do we do the endorsements? How do we do the risk assessments for some of our systems? Because these all are still old school way, and you are doing in a big committee kind of an approach, where there is a centralized committee making those decisions. So you can straight away see that becomes actually a bottleneck when you are talking about delivering, you know, at speed. Number two, the problem that I see is actually the data management practices. And the reason that I pick up the data management practices is that if you're a startup, and probably you would have not seen this problem, because you know, you can choose whatever the enterprise database, I mean the database platform that you want to. It could be NoSQL, it could be SQL, it could be, you know, you can modernize, I mean design with the modern systems, use some of the open source platforms. All this comes, you know, really handy. But if you're an existing enterprise having a legacy systems, you know, legacy database offerings, and in my experience, I have not seen an enterprise having only one database offering across the enterprise. No, we have multiple flavors of multiple products, you know, in different regions. Like, you know, example, like I could have a core banking is a different database offering. I might be having a vendor application, which is using a different database. I might be having a store or staff assisted channel. I might be using a different database. So I see number two problem is actually around the data management practices, because these data management practices are actually, you know, quickly becomes one of the bottleneck. The reason because of the naming conventions, the way how do we roll out the database changes, the way how do we source control them, do we enable them to do a continuous delivery like a CI/CD and all those stuff. So this is number two. And number three, what becomes is actually the security. And you know, the security part of it is, not all developers are switched on with security, right? And I mean, I like one of John Willis, the quote. I mean, John and me, we were interacting over the last 3-4 months for various reasons, like across, you know, building some content. And one of the things that John keeps coming and saying is actually, okay, you have an engineer who's like 3 years or, you know, 4 years experience, but you're also talking about somebody, you know, in your enterprise who's around like 20 years experience. So you look at both of them. The 20 years guy has institutional knowledge of how things works within the enterprise, right? Like it comes to governance or risk or security or something like that. But when it comes to a three to four years an engineer who's new on board in an enterprise, and the perspective completely changes because they don't have that holistic view of what's happening in the enterprise. I think the security is actually a biggest challenge where, in terms of managing the vulnerabilities, managing the licenses for your open source or your existing products, and integrating some of the security best practices in your delivery pipeline. So I see these three things are actually top of my mind: the centralized governance, number two, the data management practices, number three, the security adoption.
And I absolutely agree with you. And I want to kind of just drill into a little bit more about data. So absolutely, we need to centralize governance, because regardless of what vertical market you're in, particularly in highly regulated environments like financial institutions, because we want to move to a faster, more frequent flow, because we want to be more agile, because we want our teams to be more self-organizing, doesn't mean that we also still don't need compliance, right? That we're still not held to those type of regulations or those requirements. And I think some organizations have interesting challenges. On the flip side of that, though, BMK, we've seen financial institutions, I can't say above all, but we've seen many financial institutions, whether they're banks or other type of finance, regulated financing companies, really take hold of DevOps. I mean, some of the early adopters, some of, like you, some of the organizations that have really become case studies, insurance companies, banks and the like, really kind of embrace DevOps even earlier than some of the more traditional, say, manufacturing or product-specific type of enterprises. So I always find that a little bit fascinating. So I do think that compliance and audits in a regulated environment is not necessarily, as you've said, contrary to the principles and practices of DevOps. But the data piece of it, I think, is really fascinating. You know, I've been in IT a long time. And so, not that long, but long enough, right? But to be able to kind of see the growth of the technology organization within the enterprise, where, you know, in the early days, we were 25 people, we were all in the same location, we all yep. knew each other, we went to lunch, right? And then, and also even from a platform perspective, yeah, we had a few different platforms, but I come from the Unix world. You know, we had 6 super mini computers that everybody was operating against. And then as we grew, not only did our environment get much more complex, but our team organization got very complex. And so each unit, each team, whether it was development, whether it was pre-production operations, post-production operations, each of those acquired a different way of working, a different set of tools, a different data set, a different vocabulary. And I think that's part of what has led us to the problem today, is that retrofitting into that is a challenge. But the data lived in so many repositories that I think that, you know, now we have the term data ops. Talk a little bit about your experience, because I don't think you've been in this space maybe quite as long as I have, but maybe a little longer than some. See, I'm making you younger, right?
Thanks, Jude.
but kind of watching the evolution of kind of this growth of big, you know, cumbersome data that's unusable to now what we're looking at in terms of data ops.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, you gave a very good replaying how, you know we did in the past and how we did in the middle, like, you know, during the, you know, for maybe 10 years and then now how we are doing. You know, I think it's a very pretty good actually overview of how you did. Like, you know, we were working like a cross functional team, right? Like, you know, 15 years, 20 years before, we were like sitting together, we were cracking things together, and we had that functional silos, but we were all together. But I think then slowly few things have changed, and then again it has come back into that kind of a model. I mean, I would like to give a bit of a context in, you know, how I was attracted to the DevOps movement, because I see that most of the organizations, most of the enterprises, this is my personal take, and I might be wrong, but this is my personal view on it. The DevOps adoption doesn't start from the CX level. Okay, they don't come with an idea saying that, hey, we have to do a DevOps because we have heard of the DevOps. Because even before the CX talks about, like, you know, the CX means I'm talking about the C-level executives, right? You know, when I talk about the C-level executives, even before they introduce this DevOps thing, somebody in your enterprise is already struggling to get this into a mainstream. Somebody is already doing some bit of work, you know, in your enterprise to solve some particular problem. Maybe it could be in a particular, you know, a pocket of silo, whatever it is. Now, this is what happened to me, actually. You know, we deployed actually one of the big lending application back in 2014. And as a lead developer, I was thinking, oh, right, this is an application, a combination of made up of what, 6 or 7 different components, including database, SharePoint repository, web services, and web application, workflow engine changes. Like, you know, then we thought we can crack on the deployment within 2 hours, but the deployment went like over 3 days, you know, and we started on Friday night and we ended up on early morning, Monday, 3 o'clock. And that was an eye opener because we were taking break and we were working through the problems. We are solving the problems. The reason that we worked through the weekend was the business wants to go live on Monday morning. Okay. So we had a time pressure on that day. So we managed to get it out of the door, but the entire process was an eye-opener. It is something like, you know, somebody came and slapped me and said that, like, you know, look at the entire process, what you have. Do you think that is sustainable in the long run? And that's how I started attracted to the movement. I mean, I did not even know it was called DevOps at the time, but started digging more into the details. How do I make this team work together in these things? How do we automate certain things? And then during the research, then I bumped into a lot of contents like, you know, Jess Humble, Nicole Frosgren, John Willis, Gene Kim, you know, some of the, even my local hero, Rob England, you know, all those people I bumped into and then said, oh, right. Now, this is called DevOps momentum. And we did that automated deployments of applications in one area, which is a major, you know, it's a huge success. You know, we saved a massive amount of our time and money in that aspect. The second problem that I had was actually the database changes, you know, the data ops. And in fact, like, you know, in this year, I presented 2 topics on those data ops. You know, my topic was like this: data friction in your continuous delivery. You know, data is actually puts a friction in your delivery speed. So the reason for enterprise data management team, the struggle with this kind of an adoption is that, you know, somewhere or other, the database management team, central team, has inherited a lot of processes from their ancestors. Like, you know, some of the standards are like, what, 30, 40 years old, you know, including some of the way how you naming conventions, how do you share the files, how do you generate the scripts, and how do you roll out the changes in production, you know, those kind of things, including even doing a change in the database environment in a dev region. You know, you don't have access to do it. And you look at it, the reason because it's an enterprise organization and you can't do the changes as you wanted in the dev region. And you have to ask a question, how do I enable my developer to be highly productive? And if I want them to be highly productive, I need to really, you know, cut down the amount of comms that I'm doing with the DBA team. Instead, I want the database team to work with me in my program, in my project. So by the way, they can understand what is involved. And what we did, 3 years, 2017 period, was actually we automated one of the database deployments using a tool called FlyWayDB. And that was a major success within the bank. I mean, of course, we haven't scaled across the entire enterprise, but to get to where I was in 2017, 2018, it took me 2 years to get there. The reason because it's a constant education with the data management team in terms of the practices, in terms of how do we store, how do we source control, how do we get the scripts in order to execute in production. So this is a missing piece in your whole continuous delivery, right? Because what is the fun if I deploy my application in 20 seconds in a Kubernetes platform or a container platform, but my data takes 3 weeks to get to production, right? So that is your constraint and that you need to work on those areas, actually. So this is where we worked with the data management team. And what also I got an opportunity is to listen to the CEO from a data kitchen, you know, a few years before in a DevOps Enterprise Summit. He was talking about the data ops. And it is bringing the old school DBAs, who are like Avengers and superheroes, into changing them into a data engineers, you know, helping them to be building the platform and empowering the developer community to do the right things with the database. And this is actually a big change in the things. And I think a lot of organizations, they started working on it. And when I talk about data ops, I'm not just talking about application databases. I'm seeing this is a moment where we need to start from your application databases, your operational data, your analytical data, your business intelligence, and whatever that use, look at the entire organization, including the modern terms that we use, like your machine learning, your AI ops, and all those things are included into that.
Well, and first of all, I love the migration from data ops or DBAs, right? From, yeah, you know, my old ops days to data engineers, because I also think it changes the mindset. So unfortunately, we're going to run out of time, but I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about practical DevOps in 2021. Now, neither one of us know exactly what this new normal is going to look like. And, you know, as you know, before we started recording, being in New Zealand, your exposure to the pandemic has been significantly reduced, thankfully, through good handling, but the rest of the world is still struggling. And I think if anything, this year has shown enterprises that perhaps were lagging in terms of their investment, in terms of their progress in transformation, whether it's agile transformation, DevOps transformation, hopefully human transformation. I think this year has really exposed the need for organizations to move in that direction faster because the pandemic pushed us ahead several years. So from a practical perspective, what do you think enterprises that aren't far down this journey, that either at the beginning or maybe, you know, pretty early on, what should they think about you know, if you're the CIO, the CTO, what should you be thinking about in terms of good steps to move away from the past and into whatever this new crazy future looks like for us?
Yeah, I would think. Thanks for that. The final question, because I really love to see, you know, what we do in this space, because I really like what DevOps Institute is doing here. And the one thing is about the upskill report that, you know, we run the survey every year, which is really good. And number two is like running the skill up days, because I see that this is actually a specific area where an organization needs to focus on. The reason, because if you're talking about a 2,000 developers community within your organization or 5,000 IT employees within your organization, so it's not that everybody is switched on. It's not that everybody's, you know, learning the same pace as the others, right? Like, you know, for example, you know, I started raising my head and connecting with people and started amplifying my learning experience. And you need to bring that within the organization. Running some of the, you know, participate in the global survey that, like, you know, DevOps Institute does, or, you know, and then find out what are the new skills that you need, you know, in the space. You know, I also like what the DBS, the bank, they a couple of years before in one of the DevOps transformation story, they shared us that, you know, you need new skill for this new age, right? And you cannot, you know, work in the same way with the same tool set, with the same set of practices. So this is where you need to upskill yourself. You need to upskill your organization and everybody. And number two is that establishing the common understanding. You were talking about in the earlier in one point that where we need to have a shared understanding of some of the terminologies that we use in the organization, right? So having that ubiquitous the language that we use. Number two, and upskilling everybody in terms of how we can do, it could be any form. It could be like you have a dojo, you have internal training programs, you know, you have internal skill up days, you know, those kind of ideas that we do. And I think these two things are really important as a chief information officer or chief technology officer for an organization. And I see that my humble request for the community is that the training is the way how you can transform your organization.
Yeah, I agree with you. And thank you for calling out some of the work that DevOps Institute does that I'm particularly and my team is so proud of, because our mission is to advance the humans of DevOps. And I really sincerely believe that it's human transformation that's going to drive digital transformation. And you're right, the shelf life of the existing IT professional is pretty short right now because the technology is evolving very quickly. And developers are now being required, not even encouraged, to pick up new skills like DevSecOps or testing skills or infrastructure as code, because everything is code. And so I think that, you know, particularly people that have been in this space for a long time and enterprises need to kind of step back and go, okay, what do we need? Are we going to run out of skill as fast as we run out of other competencies? So I think that's important. I think that's really a nice way to end, because I'm going to issue a plea to those that are listening that BMK mentioned the upskilling report. Every year, DevOps Institute does a pretty healthy community project known as Upskilling the Enterprise DevOps Skills Report. And we collect input in a pretty healthy survey that's released usually around late summer, early fall, that we reach out to the community and say, tell us which skills are considered must-have, nice-to-have, and not as important anymore. And then that results in an annual report that's very deep, a lot of really, very good data. That survey for 2021 is open now. So if you're listening to this, I have two asks. Please take a few minutes, take you about 20 minutes to fill out this survey. The data that we collect is analyzed and the resulting report has been downloaded this year about 4,000 times. So it's provided a lot of insight into the community, and we do it as part of our mission to support the humans. So take a few minutes. You might be entered into a raffle to win a Nintendo Switch. Hopefully that's something that inspires you, but be inspired by the report. I think this year, more than ever, this data is going to be particularly important. And if you want to see the report, go up to our website and download the 2020. I also asked you to become a member of DevOps Institute. You can become a professional member of DevOps Institute at no cost. It's free. There's a lot of resources. If you're interested in becoming an ambassador like BMK, the ambassador community, has really just taken on its own dynamic. And we're so grateful for people like BMK for participating. BMK, thank you. Your insight, as always, is really from the ground up, right? You're in the trenches. You see it every day. But I think, as importantly, you've seen it evolve, right? You've seen it from the early days. I think the first time you and I met was 2015, maybe. So I think we're in our 5 years. And from 2015 to 2020, a lot of things have changed. So I always appreciate your insight, and I'm going to invite you to come back next year, and let's see if some of our predictions are true.
Definitely. Hey, thank you very much, Jane, for this opportunity, and love working with the DevOps Institute folks and the fellow ambassadors. And also, the same way, I would like to request the audience who are based out of New Zealand, and please kindly, the New Zealand and Australian DevOps enthusiast, please kindly take up the upskill survey, and then because that data will tell us, you know, where we need to improve, what are the new things that we need to learn. And this will be really a great help for not just for you, but also for your organization where you're working. So please kindly support us in the space. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you very much, Jane.
Thank you, BMK. And thank you, everyone. Please stay safe, stay connected, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.